thanks for the invitation, first of all. I was hoping a bit for better weather, but otherwise it's really nice to be here. Anyway, this talk will be mainly based on this paper here with that you cannot see right now. Let's see. All right, this paper here with Jelle Hartung, Lorenzo Mancolini, Nils Obers, and Siki from here. And then there's also some of it will be from future or ongoing papers that is also with Gerben Ohling and some of it with Leo Bidusi. Introduction. I hope you can read my handwriting. So let me sort of start a bit more broadly. So of course, one of the main questions we are interested in as theoretical physicists is how does geometry, so time and space emerge from quantum mechanical theory? And how does gravity emerge as well? And it seems that the answer lies somehow in this holographic duality, in the holographic principle. And we have a very concrete version of the holographic duality, namely the duality between n equal 4, Super-Engmills, and type 2B string theory. So then the problem should be solved, right? But however, the problem is that it's still difficult, because if you want to see gravity emerge, you have to take the limit of strong tooth coupling. And that's not very easy to do in n equal 4 super-Engmills, although there's some impressive results using integrability. But it only covers some corners of the theory for large coupling. So instead, perhaps, of then using this holographic duality, where it's quite difficult to go to strong coupling, perhaps one could work with some simpler version of holography instead. And then we can perhaps take inspiration in the Bronstein cube of theories. So here you have classical mechanics, and then you can turn on the Planck constant or the gravitational constant or a finite speed of light. And then you can go to the various theories. And the most advanced one is the one here, which lies opposite to classical mechanics. And that's, of course, quantum gravity. And that's what we are interested in understanding. Or more precisely, you could say we want to understand how you go from quantum gravity to GR. And if we can do that, then we can also figure out how time, space, and gravity emerges. But instead of working in this theory, which is perhaps a bit too difficult, we could instead work in this one. And this is non-relativistic quantum gravity. So here we have some work in some limit where we take the speed of light to infinity. And then instead of studying how gravity emerges here, we could study how some non-relativistic version of gravity emerges from non-relativistic quantum gravity. And in the context of holographic duality, the question could then be, can one take a non-relativistic limit of ADS GFT? And this brings me to what I call spin matrix theories, because as you will see, this actually provides you a non-relativistic limit of ADS GFT. So what is spin matrix theory? Well, the spin matrix theory limits starts with n equal 4 super-Engmills on a 3-sphere, and then you consider one of the BPS bounds of n equal 4 super-Engmills. So these BPS bounds looks like this, where E is the energy of any state in the theory And that is always bigger than some particular linear combination of the charges in the theory. So you have the S1 and S2 are the angular momentum on the three sphere, and J1, J2, J3 are the R charges. And then you can find particular linear combinations where this is always satisfied. And if you then go close to one of these BPS bounds, then you can take a limit. So we take the limit where we send the toothed coupling to zero with this ratio E minus Q over lambda fixed. And we also keep fixed the rank of the gauge group of the theory. So in that way, what we basically do is we keep all the states which have energies just above E equals Q, and we decouple all the states with higher energy. So in that way, we just look at a very small sector of the theory. And as we shall see, this then becomes a quantum mechanical theory instead of a quantum field theory. So what is this quantum mechanical theory? Well, this is what we call spin matrix theory. And the reason is just the prosaic reason that you can view the Hilbert space of this quantum mechanical theory as built using racing operators where you have a so-called spin index, which is in the representation of some Lie group, and then some matrix indices, which is in the adjoint of UN. And then you have a singlet condition on the UN indices, so there's never any free matrix indices. So you have a particular Hilbert space and also a particular Hamiltonian that I don't want to write here, but it's a Hamiltonian that annihilates two operators and creates two new ones. It commutes with this spin generators, and the matrix and spin parts are factorized. And if you get it as a limit of n equal 4, then it's nothing but the one loop dilatation operator, for those of you who know what that is. Then you can take various limits of n equal 4 because you have various BPS bounds. So here are five different of the most interesting BPS bounds you can look at. So the simplest one in this list is this SU2 sector. And the most complicated one is the SU123, which includes all the other cases as subsectors, basically. If you take the n going to infinity, the planar limit of the spin matrix theory, what you get is a nearest neighbor spin chain. And you can actually then see that at finite n, the Hamiltonian, the one I was talking about here, of spin matrix theory, is actually uniquely given if you know the spin chain Hamiltonian. So in this sense, you can think of spin matrix theory as a finite n generalization of a nearest neighbor spin chain. And let me give you an example. So the simplest case is this SU2 spin matrix theory. So you have this particular BPS bound here where these are two R charges, J1 and J2. And then the Hilbert space consists of two matrix valued racing operators corresponding to spin up and spin down. So there's been half representation of SU2. Then you have some singlet condition, which is probably a bit unreadable. And then the Hamiltonian, if you take this limit, is just this relatively simple looking Hamiltonian. So this defines you a very particular quantum mechanical theory where everything is known in the theory. And you can in particular see that now you could take the strong coupling limit, which corresponds to this coupling G going to infinity, and then study what happens at strong coupling in this theory. So the point of this is that it's a completely well-defined quantum mechanical theory where you know everything. So let's look at the planar limit of this theory. Then, as I said before, you get a nearest neighbor spin chain. In this case, it's the Heisenberg spin chain. And then you can take a further limit where you take look at very long spin chains, and then you get a sigma model. In this case, the so-called Landau-Lipschitz sigma model. The Lagrangian is written here. And you can see that this is a non-relativistic two-dimensional field theory. It's non-relativistic because you have the prime is the space derivative and the dot is the time derivative, and you have two space derivatives here and one time derivative. So it's a non-relativistic theory, clearly. And then you could be bold to say, what if this is a non-relativistic string theory? And this is maybe very bold in the sense that Landau-Lipschitz sigma models have been known for, I don't know, at least since the 80s, probably also further back. So can this really be a non-relativistic string theory? So one clue to this, to understand this, is that we can actually get the same sigma model from a limit of string theory. So we have shown, so Kruszenski first have shown, and then we sort of put it in our language later. We've shown that you can actually get this. You can take the same spin matrix limit on the string theory side, and you get out the same Lagrangian, exactly the same Lagrangian with the same coefficient and everything. So this points to that maybe this could be a string theory. And another clue to the non-relativistic part of this is that the spin matrix theory limit actually looks very non-relativistic also. Because if you look at the Magnon dispersion relation in the ADS-CFT correspondence, then Beisert have shown that this is the general dispersion relation you can have. And then you can see if I take the spin matrix theory limit on this dispersion relation, I precisely get rid of the square root and get a dispersion relation for a nearest neighbor spin chain. So this looks like going from something relativistic to something non-relativistic, and it becomes even more familiar if you take the small momenta limit corresponding to the Penrose limit on the ADS-CFT side, and then it's really a standard relativistic dispersion relation to a Galilean dispersion relation. So this all points to that the spin matrix limit acting on the string world sheet is actually a non-relativistic limit.
Is the level of the dispersion relation, this is like a giant Magnon limit, like a
Yeah.
But it will be different. That's just the in the full theory. This will be different, right? You're not taking the Hoffman models
out of it. No. This is more general than the giant Magnon. That's like a particular realization of this dispersion relation in that case. But it's something Beisert derived from the PSU 2/2/4 supersymmetry algebra, the global symmetry of ADS-CFT. Anyway, so suppose we can really make this into a genuine string theory. Then you could think, that would be fun because that would be quite nice because then from this spin matrix theory, we have found a string theory. And then since we know string theory can give rise to gravity, perhaps then there's a non-relativistic version of geometry and gravity that emerged from string theory and thereby also from spin matrix theory. And as you'll see later, at least I have some result on the geometric part of this. So now we go to the detailed part. So the goal here is to obtain the covariant to obtain the covariant and general action for non-relativistic string theory, which is related to the spin matrix theory limit. So I think what I will do now will not really look like it has much to do with spin matrix theory at first, but then later we shall see that you can apply it. To start with, what we do is we take a general d-dimensional metric, and then we assume that we have a null isometry around a particular direction that we call u, and then we can write the metric like this, and where these tau and m are one forms, and this h mu nu is a metric on this part here, and none of these depend on u. Then you can show that these three objects actually fits into something called torsional Newton-Cartan geometry, which is a particular type of non-relativistic geometry. Tau is basically, that tells you something about how the non-relativistic geometry is foliated with respect to time. M is a U1 gauge field, and H mu nu is the metric on the spatial directions of this non-relativistic geometry. And then you can look at the local symmetries, and apart from the translations, there's a U1 symmetry here, which is why they call this a U1 gauge field. And then this lambda here corresponds to some Galilean boost symmetry. So this is clearly a non-relativistic geometry. So on this background, I now put a Polyakov convection, because I mean, when you include the u direction, then it's a relativistic geometry. If you ignore the u direction, then it's a non-relativistic geometry. I hope you see what I mean. So the full metric is still relativistic. So we can put a Polyakov Lagrangian on this background with a null isometry. And the details are not so important, but I wrote it anyway. So it looks like this, where this h bar is defined like that. And whenever I have tau alpha, etc., I just mean the pullback of tau mu. Then we can define the momentum along the u direction, along this null isometry. And since this is an isometry, the current along u is conserved. And we now want to restrict ourselves to a fixed sector of momenta along this direction. And this is something that comes natural out of this natural demand to demand for this spin matrix theory limit. So instead of having this Polyakov Lagrangian, I can write an equivalent Lagrangian written here, where xu, so the string field in the u direction, is replaced by another field eta and some Lagrange multipliers, a0 and a1. And you can then interpret this eta as that the string is winding around eta, and that you have a periodic target space direction with period p over t. So you see that it's important here that I say that I work for fixed momenta, because otherwise this interpretation wouldn't make sense, because the period of the direction is given by this momenta. So why do I change variables? Well, that's because I want to put the conservation of this momentum off shell, so that I can basically I want to get rid of the degrees of freedom associated with xu and re-express them in a different way, which is more natural to my limit. Then some other technical stuff. So I take the world volume metric for the Polyakov convection and express in terms of Zweibeins, and then I make a field redefinition. So I replace my Lagrange multiplier A0 and A1 with lambda plus and lambda minus. This is, again, just some details. So in the end, the result is this Lagrangian here, obtained in this paper with Siki last year. This is a Lagrangian on a background given by tau m and h mu nu, which is this torsional Newton-Cartan geometry. And then you have eta as well, which is this periodic direction on which you have a winding mode. And then you have the two Lagrange multipliers. And at this point, although the target space is non-relativistic, the world sheet theory is still a relativistic two-dimensional CFT. And then if any of you have worked on string Newton-Cartan or stringy Newton-Cartan spaces, you might see this look familiar. I know some of you have worked on it, so. and this is no accident. There's actually a map that relates the string on string Newton-Cartan geometry to this geometry, provided that you have a spatial isometry in that theory. So this relates to the polyo convection of Eric and Schorme and Siki, also written down last year, and also some earlier work on that. You can also get out the so-called Gomis-Oguri non-relativistic string written down way back almost 20 years ago out of this theory, which again is no accident because it's all also related to this string Newton-Cartan geometry. All right. Any questions to this so far? So let me go on. So now we will want to take a non-relativistic limit also of the world sheet theory. So we parameterize this limit with saying that we have a parameter C that we take to infinity, and then basically what this C going to infinity limit does is to send the string tension to zero. So we keep fixed all the tilted quantities here. So T goes like 1 over C, tau goes like C squared, eta goes like C, etc. And you see this is a non-relativistic limit because for the two Zweibeins, you can see the Zweibein along tangent space time and the Zweibein along tangent space space, they scale differently. So this is why it's non-relativistic on the world sheet. And if you insert all this in this action here and take the limit and remove the tildes again, then you get this theory here. So as I will explain you now, this is now a two-dimensional non-relativistic CFT with a non-relativistic target space. And This is basically the string theory of spin matrix theory, the string theory that emerged from spin matrix theory, and it's at this point a fully covariant expression, unlike this gauge fixed expression that I had in for the Landau-Lisius model. So the target space is in terms of some new type of non-relativistic geometry that we call U1 Galilean geometry, and this is tau m and h mu nu. Then we still have this compact direction eta, which is rescaled but still compact, and then two Lagrange multipliers which come out of the limit of lambda plus and lambda minus. And if we look at the target space more closely, then you can see that if you look at local symmetries, then we have the translations as before, Then we have a U1 transformation. So this M is still a U1 gauge field. And then we have the Galilean boost. But the Galilean boost don't anymore mix with M. So you have a structure where from having sort of locally the Bachmann symmetry algebra, your algebra is basically the Galilean algebra times a U1 gauge symmetry. So the tau and H mu nu and M decouple from each other geometrically. So that's why it's a different geometry. And then I said it was a non-relativistic CFT. So why is it non-relativistic CFT? Well, you can see that the action is invariant under this transformation of the Zweibeins. So the F here is basically a Weyl rescaling of my world sheet metric, whereas the F hat precisely corresponds to a Galilean boost. So before you had a local Lorentz symmetry and a local and a Weyl rescaling before you took the limit, but now instead you have a Weyl symmetry and a local Galilean boost on the world sheet. So this is basically why it's a two-dimensional non-relativistic CFT. And you can also try to choose flat gauge where you, if you are in the case of the relativistic string, you would get out the two copies of the Virasoro algebra. In this case, you instead get something called the Galilean conformal algebra, which has this algebra here. And this is something that came up in some papers of Bakhti and co-authors where they worked on tensionless limits of strings. But this is another type of realization of this algebra, it seems. All right. Any questions? Then I just want to briefly mention, there's a lot of details here that I will not mention, but just briefly, what is the connection to spin matrix theory? So here you start with the Polyakov action on ADS5 cosS5. And as is well known, you have an effective string tension, which is given by the ADS radius squared over, times the string tension. So you can write this like this. Then you choose your favorite BPS bound, like for example, the one giving the SU2 spin matrix theory. And then you can translate the spin matrix theory limit to string theory variables. So instead of taking the tooth coupling to zero, you take GS to zero, keeping the flux, the five-form flux fixed, and then keeping this quantity fixed. That's the translation of the spin matrix theory limit into string theory. And this limit is then realized as the C going to infinity limit I just told you about, where C is identified with this. And then you also have to say relate x0 to E minus Q and the U direction to some charges as well. So if you do all this, then you realize the spin matrix theory limit as this scaling limit that we had before on the world sheet, okay? So then you can get out a non-relativistic string action for the spin matrix theory. And this also means you get, for each spin matrix theory, you get a particular type of non-relativistic target space. So here again, I have the list of limits. And if I add up both the directions of the U1 Galilean geometry and this compact eta direction, then the number of space-time dimension is written here. So in the SU2 case, you get a four-dimensional target space. And if you go to the maximal case, you go to a 10-dimensional target space. So you keep all the space-time dimensions of the original type 2b target space. of ADS5 cos S5. If we look at the SU2, since this is sort of the case I'm mentioning in this talk, there are six directions when you take this C going to infinity limit that you can argue decouples, because there's sort of an infinitely steep potential, or there's some directions that will have masses that goes to infinity. So there's six directions that decouple in that way. And basically the ADS5 cos S5 geometry reduces to R cross S3 then. And then you take the limit, and then you get this Galilean geometry here. So you see it's a trivial time direction and a two-sphere, and then with some gauge field defined on the two-sphere. And this is basically then the non-relativistic geometry that lies behind what is known as the Landau-Lisius model. So now we can, you know, read off what is the actual four-dimensional target space that the Landau-Lisius model corresponds to. And we have accomplished, rewriting the Landau-Lisius model really as a string theory, a non-relativistic string theory. Because now it's not gauge fixed anymore. Now we can sort of un-gauge fix it and write a fully covariant equivalent description. And interestingly, you could say, what about these eta directions? What's the reason that it's periodic and there is some winding of the string along the eta direction? Well, in this picture, it has a very nice interpretation, because the fact that the string winds around eta, you can go back and see how did the Landau-Lisius model emerge from the spin chain, and then you can see that what eta points at is nothing but the sides of the spin chain. So eta really points to a particular position on the periodic spin chain. And this is why you get naturally this periodic direction on the string theory side. And then I try to summarize a bit this thing I said. So you have this new covariant non-relativistic string theory with non-relativistic conformal invariance, GCA symmetry, and the target space, this U1 Galilean geometry. So you get this from spin matrix theory. You can think of this in terms of taking the n going to infinity limit and then getting it out of the nearest neighbor spin chain in the limit of very long chains, because this gives this non-relativistic sigma model, for example, a Landau-Lisius model, which is equivalent to this. Or you can also get it from taking a limit of strings on ADS5 cos S5, and then taking the C going to infinity limit that I told you about. Or you can also go from n equal 4 and through spin matrix theory and get the same action again. Yes. All right, so, yes?
So here, do you integrate over the two-dimensional gravity? Usually in spin theory, we integrate over the two-dimensional gravity theory. Are you doing that here or not? Otherwise, it's more like a solitonic string. It's not really a fundamental string.
Yeah, so you're asking if I integrate over the Wall-Street metric, I guess.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's what we do in usual relativistic string theory and also in non-relativistic string theory.
Yeah.
We have to integrate over the modular space of Riemann surfaces. So here is an analog of that.
Yeah, I think so. It's something we are working on. At this point we haven't fully worked it out, I'll come back to it later, where I talk about higher genus wall sheets and things like that. But this is we just have some preliminary results on that. It's not really I cannot claim that we understand it fully yet. All right, but In string theory, you typically are studying some solvable backgrounds as the first thing. So one typical background which is well motivated is the maximally supersymmetric PP wave corresponding to some free relativistic particles on the world sheet. So it would be nice to know what the analog of this is for the non-relativistic string. And also, is there some analog of starting with d-dimensional Minkowski space, you know, where you find there is a critical dimension of string theory and so forth. So what is the analog of this background? So d-dimensional Minkowski space for you, one Galilean geometry. The analog of this seems to be this type of geometry here. So if you consider spin matrix theory limits of a string on a maximally supersymmetric PP wave, then it seems whatever spin matrix limit you take, you get the same type of geometry. So you have basically a flat time direction and some flat spatial direction, and then you have a U1 field strength, which is constant on each two-plane of the theory. And then the only thing that varies is how many of these planes you have. So in the SU2 sector, you have only one, but in the SU2-3 sector, you have four. And let me know if you have a better suggestion, but we call this flat fluxed geometry because we like that every abbreviation FF because it should come out of PP waves. This you can generalize. So with PP waves, you have always the same coefficient for the flux, but you can generalize it to have arbitrary coefficients as well. So let's consider the case where you just have one plane and an arbitrary coefficient, and then write down the non-relativistic string Lagrangian and just gauge fix it completely. Then the Lagrangian becomes this, and you can then solve the equation of motion and see the solution is like this, where C is x plus iy. And this gives a world sheet dispersion relation like this. So the world sheet dispersion relation of a Galilean particle of mass mu. And the point of showing this is that you can see that if you now take the u going to zero limit, which you would think of as flat space, you see that the dynamics basically disappears because then you have a massless particle, you could say, but since we are in a non-relativistic theory, there's no massless particles, so there's no dynamics in this case. So this is the reason why fully flat geometry doesn't seem to be interesting to consider. Instead, one should turn on this constant flux on the two-plane to get an interesting dynamics. So then you can, and this is not something we have done yet, but then you can hope to study in general this non-relativistic string theory on these FF geometries corresponding to having n free Galilean particles on the wall sheet. So this, I claim, is a natural target space to quantize in. We did try to in the sort of fully gauge-fixed version, try to see if there was something like a critical dimension like you have in the light cone quantization of relativistic string theory, you know, where you can see that the global symmetry algebra of Minkowski space actually has an anomaly. Given that we live in 10 dimensions. But in this case, there doesn't seem to be any critical dimension from this. You always have the same algebra without anomaly. But another thing you could then do is try to make a covariant quantization, and then perhaps there could be an anomaly in the GCA algebra. And at least there's the possibility of having a central extension in this algebra. So it's not excluded that could give something non-trivial. It could also be that there's just no anomaly for any dimension. So there's no critical dimension of this theory. So I just wanted to remind you again that this dispersion relation, is like this. But now we can also associate geometries. So at least, I mean, here there's various geometries for the spin matrix theory. But if we go this way, we could first go from ADS5 plus S5 to the maximally supersymmetric PP wave. And then we go to this FF geometry, which is associated with this Galilean particle dispersion relation. All right. So any question to this part? So the last thing I want to discuss is the perturbation theory. This is something we just started working on. So I don't guarantee that the understanding here holds up to further scrutiny. But in relativistic covariant string theory, you of course know that you can write the action as the action on the target space with the metric and the B field, and at least in the Nevis-Schwartz sector, and then a piece coupling to the dilaton, which looks like this. If the dilaton is constant, you can write this piece here as the Euler character times the dilaton. And then you can define string perturbation theory by saying that e to the minus I, this piece of the action in the Euclidean section, is basically the string coupling to minus the Euler character. Okay, so this gives this topological expansion of string theory with the compact Riemann surfaces. So what happens to this if we take this C going to infinity limit? And again, this is preliminary, but it looks like what happens is kind of interesting. So you can write this, let me see, square root of gr as d of the exterior derivative of a one form. And in the limit, this one form, in the C going to infinity limit, the one form looks like this. So then, first of all, you see that if you want to avoid that the action blows up, you need that this term should be zero. But if this term is zero, then actually omega as a whole goes to zero. But let's go back to this piece first. So why is this zero? Well, the interpretation, at least we have at the moment, is that this is some foliation requirement of your world sheet. Because we go from a relativistic world sheet to a non-relativistic world sheet, and then we have some requirement of how you foliate the world sheet with respect to world sheet time. And this, we think, is the reason that this term is forced to be zero in the limit. And then you can ask, why should the omega as a whole disappear? Well, one reason is that there doesn't seem to be any natural curvature invariant to write down for 1 plus 1 Galilean theory. So we don't really have any equivalent of this term in the resulting theory. And also, if you try to take the tree-level case, so genus 0, you have a sphere. And then you make this parameterization with respect to world sheet time. then you have sort of two critical points, you know, where, you know, for a particular value of the world sheet time, there's a circle that swings to zero here or here. So this gives two critical points. If you take out these two points, you can of course map this to a flat cylinder. And it seems that in this limit we have, the reason that you would have a Euler character equal 2 for a cylinder would be some boundary term at plus and minus infinite world sheet time. But these boundary terms precisely seems to disappear because of this. And then the Euler character basically goes to zero. So then what is the interpretation of this? Well, in the relativistic string theory, you can create a string out of nothing and it can disappear again. But this is not really true in the non-relativistic case, because we know that this non-relativistic string theory comes out of spin chains, and this interaction term can take a spin chain and split it into two, or it can take two spin chains and turn it into one. But roughly speaking, the total length of the spin chains is conserved. So the tree-level diagram basically then corresponds to a string, starting with a string and ending with the same string of the same length. And that's why it's a flat cylinder. So it's an expression of the conservation of the length of the spin chain.
Yeah, but conservation of length, you can allow a nucleation of the string.
Sorry?
You were saying that you can nucleate two strings.
Yes, yes.
Preserving the length is not the same as preserving the topology of the circle.
That's true. So then you can look at higher genus, and this is a bit speculative, but what we think is happening is, if you again make this foliation with respect to world sheet time of this torus, then these two points, which both contributes one to the Euler character because it's either a source or a sink, is normally cancelled out by the two saddle points here. But if we say that these two points don't give any contribution, then it's only the saddle points that are left, and then we should get Euler character minus two. So our interpretation of this is that we go to some flat cylinder which is cut into two cylinders with some saddle points here and here, where the one cylinder is split in two. And this seems a lot like what happens in the light cone string field theory, actually. And the fact that you have length conservation is then that, I mean, you start with a string of a fixed length, then it turns then it splits into two strings and then it joins again. Here, of course, you create a string, then it splits into two strings, and then the string disappears again in this vacuum diagram. But here you have to start with a string at t equal minus infinity, and then it splits up and joins again, and then go to a string at t equal plus infinity. That's at least how we interpret it so far. Any questions to this? All right, so let me conclude. So we have a covariant formulation of a string with the non-relativistic CFT on the world sheet and the non-relativistic target space, which emerges naturally from the spin matrix theory limits of ADS CFT. We would like to covariantly quantize this non-relativistic string on these FF geometries and hopefully be able to say something about this central extension of the GCA algebra, if it's there or not. Then we would also like to see if we can see, I mean, now we have an emergent geometry from spin matrix theory. Could we possibly also have an emergent gravity that gives the dynamics of this geometry? That would be very exciting. So this would require some analog of the beta function calculation and relativistic string theory. Then we have the string perturbation theory I already talked about. One could also imagine perhaps that you could take this recent story of Berkovich, where he writes down string theory for on ADS5 causes 5 in his pure spinner formalism for very small ADS radius. And perhaps one could take this limit of this and then actually be able to derive a version of this non-relativistic string theory where it also works for spin chains which are not very large but a finite size and with supersymmetry etc. Then more generally, the spin matrix theory limit, one can also take of deep brains and black holes, etc. But let me stop here. Thank you.
Any more questions for Charles?
So you have a world sheet metric in these non-relativistic things. So do you know what happens to kappa symmetry?
No. No, we haven't studied supersymmetry, so that we don't know.
That might be another way to constrain your dimension of space-time.
Yes. And as far as I know, I mean, kappa symmetry can also give you some equations for the dynamics of, I mean, the gravitational dynamics, right? So that could also be interesting for that reason.
The Landau-Lipschitz model, normally the symmetries don't determine the relative normalization of the two derivative and the one derivative term. Whereas you were always finding it with just an overall normalization as a parameter. Is there a significance to that? Why the two terms are coming with this fixed relative normalization?
In which case, in the gauge fixed version or
any version? I mean, normally if you drive that for magnons, then the symmetries are only, they don't give you the relative normalization of the two terms.
Yeah. That's true.
You were getting you only had your only parameter was up front, so you had a fixed relative normalization.
Yeah. I mean, it's okay. So that. It's because you have a particular realization of the spin matrix limit where you get it like that. You can show. I mean you have to use the ADS CFT dictionary and make sure you have the same the same notion of global time in ADS associated with the time coordinate in n equal 4 superingmills, and then you can, if you do this carefully, you can see you should get out the same sigma model. But I mean, if you could of course change the limit a little bit and get a different notion of, use a different notion of time and then get a different coefficient, that's true.
Any more questions? If not, Charles will be here for tomorrow in case you have more questions. Huh?